around here.
Captain! Signatures detected.
Shields up.
Signatures detected.
Red alert.
Context Starfleet Command.
What's happening?
Context Starfleet Command.
Delay that order.
Context Starfleet Command.
This is the captain.
Context Starfleet Command.
Get out of my chair.
We have engaged the Klingons.
Klingons?
Welcome to The Greatest Discovery, a new Star Trek podcast from the makers of The Greatest Generation. We're covering Star Trek Discovery. We're covering Star Trek Picard. We're covering Lower Decks. We're covering comic books. I'm Ben Harrison.
Covering it all like one of those weighted blankets. That's what our show is. I'm Adam Pranica.
like they put on you in an X-ray?
No, like my wife uses to sleep.
What is it?
It's a heavy blanket. I don't know what they fill it with, but it's heavy stuff.
Is she getting gains in her sleep?
Tell you what, she prefers the touch of the heavy blanket to my own touch. That's all I really know.
Oh. Maybe I should put my wife on it.
This is a technology I need to hip you to, Ben, because as soon as... Look, I'm not passing any judgment at all for people that invite people outside of the marriage into their marital bed. But I'll tell you this, as soon as an invitation was extended to weighted blanket, and once weighted blanket came onto the scene, nighttime snugs went away almost entirely.
Oh, wow. Are you a blanket cuck?
Yeah, I'm looking across the bed at this blanket all over my wife, and I'm like, that used to be me.
That sounds great. I mean, my wife is basically done with me at this point as well, so... This could be a nice snooze button on our divorce.
Yeah, a blanket can really kick that out a few months, I think. Give her something to think about.
Yeah. Cool.
Make that the day one Hanukkah gift you give her. That'll allow her to coast through the rest of the holiday.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds great.
I didn't expect a throwaway line about a blanket to do such emotional damage, but here we are.
Yeah. Well, this is this. I was in a bit of a panic last night because I got home from dinner expecting to read the last two books in the Star Trek Discovery Aftermath series, only to discover that book four is not out yet.
No.
I don't know what led me to believe that it would be out by now, but I was positive that it was going to be.
Oh, I believe I led you to believe that.
But book four does have a release date, but book three seems to be the end of the series.
Yeah, I don't get it. It's very confusing.
What's going on, IDW?
I'll tell you what's going on today's episode. It's we're ending one story and beginning another, because in the absence of a fourth Aftermath book, we're going to bring you the first of the Star Trek Picard comics.
That is true. When one Star Trek door closes, another one opens.
Yeah.
Which wasn't always the case, but we are learning that is going to be the way it is going forward, because they keep producing new Star Trek stuff.
Yeah, before J.J. Abrams found his Star Trek crowbar, those doors were sealed. Big time, right?
Yeah. What do you think a Star Trek crowbar looks like? Does it actually physically interact with something, or is it kind of like Geordi's beard trimmer, where it just shines a blue light on the crate and then it pops open?
All I know is that the Klingon crowbar has got two ends.
There's totally a book four listed in places.
Well, it's none of our concern today, Ben. What do you say we sit on the floor next to the spinny rack and open up some comics?
Let's do it, Adam.
So we're starting with Star Trek Discovery Aftermath Issue 3, and where we left our story is Laurel on the ground, imprisoned by the by people who call themselves the Shadows of Kalis.
Yes.
The Shadows of Kalis.
The guys that that broke into the diplomatic conference and forced Spock to defenestrate himself with Captain Pike. These are some bad dudes that are here to stop the peace talks and seize control of the Empire back from Laurel.
if you're a Klingon and you're going to name your splinter faction, I might choose a name that doesn't have an SH sound in it, just personally.
These guys are starting to look a lot more Worfy, so maybe they can pronounce S's the way Worf can.
Yeah, they can pronounce S's like Worf and not like Kevin.
A lot of these disco-era Klingons are like half Dowd, right?
There's a reason that my people aren't named the Douche. It just sounds very shilly coming from me.
That would be cruel.
Laurel kind of goes into a weird trance when she's taken prisoner here. Like, she's forced down to the ground, and she's just hearing all of this shit talk happening around her. She never loses her cool. She just kind of, like, cocoons herself a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, she's never in a panic.
Maybe she's distracted by the Klingons all wearing Sorrel boots.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I guess that's appropriate if you're going to an ice world like this.
For years, I used to shop at Eddie Bauer, but now I am an L.L. Bean man.
The catalog comes slightly more often and features a broader range of wide shoe sizes, appropriate for my feet.
When I was lobotomized, I forgot to transfer the addresses to all my old catalogs to my new address.
I just like the return policy better.
She is kind of flexing to these guys that she brought, you know, she's got this huge ship that's, it's not even in orbit. It's like in atmosphere. and she's like, yeah, like I've got that huge ship right there and it's full of loyal troops, loyal to me. And they're like, you idiot, we came on that ship.
It's got to be so much more complex to bring a giant ship into a planet's atmosphere because you know that, like, parts of it are burning while other parts are cool, right?
Yeah. What do you think that blade is made of? Is that all solid down there on the Cleave ship?
Sure looks that way.
Yeah. You definitely don't want to get stationed in the blade section if you're just a crewman on that ship, right?
You definitely want to take the Cleave ship to a professional to get it sharpened every once in a while. Otherwise, it's not going to be able to cut through those tomatoes at all.
Yeah, when you're cutting onions, it'll make you much more teary-eyed.
A dull Cleave ship is a dangerous Cleave ship, Ben. I've always thought that.
Any chef or Klingon will tell you that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we also catch up with Spock and Pike, and I was a little unclear about where their journey takes them, because the sense I had at the end of the last issue and the beginning of this is that they are walking away from the complex that the peace talks are taking place in, and, like, finding the drive cone of a crashed ship to take refuge in. There's also just, like, a hard cut, like, mid-page after Pike orders Spock to run back and look after Laurel and try and save her, where Spock is just back in the building where the conference was supposed to take place.
Yeah, it seems like there's a jump in geographical continuity, or maybe there was an edit to the story that, you know, maybe a couple of pages were removed or something.
Well, what I surmised was that's like the base of the building, and they just don't show, there's just not a drawing to show that there's a continuity there, but I don't know why all the walking around in the snow if that's the case.
I mean, I remember from physics class, like, you can graph out, like, the velocity, like, straight velocity and fall velocity, and I don't think they got enough speed out the window to project themselves that far away from the base to then result in a miles-long hike back in.
Right.
It's strange. It would seem as though they just fell. Like, if you were to fall out the second story of a home into the bushes below, you'd just walk back in the front door, right? Why the journey?
Maybe the snow's coming down so thick that they got lost for a while.
Maybe the atmosphere is such that they really did get a lot of distance out that window.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Maybe the wind's blowing real hard.
Spock is using an inner monologue to keep himself warm. It's something that that Pike is unable to do. He sort of comes to as soon as Spock rests him on the floor of the interior of this thing. And yeah. Pike is pretty out of his mind, but he's with it enough to order Spock to look after Laurel, find her and make sure she's safe, because these negotiations depend on that.
Pike is not interested in getting in touch with the Enterprise first. He thinks that finding and protecting Laurel is of higher priority. And I guess, I don't think they ever say this explicitly, but there does seem to be some problem with communicating with the Enterprise. Maybe that was addressed in the last book. I don't remember.
There's one thing that these pages had me noticing about the costuming on Star Trek Discovery, which is Spock's garment is wrinkly, and you can tell just by looking at it, like there are wrinkles drawn into it. Mm-hmm. But on the comic page, just like in the show, you never see this tunic wrinkle. It looks very stiff.
Yeah, you're talking about Pike's.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Despite having a bloody face, Pike looks great.
It's true. It's nice to have. I mean, I think you would have a pretty strong argument against this, but I do like a wrinkle-free garment. If I can get one that actually feels like a natural fiber, it's so hard to find one that does both.
Yeah, they tend to, the coatings that they put on tend to make them feel weird and clammy.
Yeah, don't like that.
I mean, I've just resigned myself to being a rumpled man, but you know, occasionally I'll have an ironed shirt and catch a look at myself in the mirror and be like, oh. It's nice to be not rumpled sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the best rumples in the game. It's Benjamin R. Harrison.
Mm-hmm. It's like stilt skin, Ben Harrison, other rumpled people.
There's still a bandit in this facility, which I think is smart, right? If you're part of the Shadows of Kalish, you probably do want to leave one behind just to clean up the mess that you've left. And this is a bandit that finds Spock.
Yeah, well, I think he's like on patrol because they've told Laurel that they're not going to kill her just yet. But I don't know if they've actually left the facility.
If you're taking over a facility, you definitely want to do regular walks around the perimeter. I mean, this is classic bad guy stuff.
Yeah, this guy makes the error that many bad guys in many movies have made, which is getting too close to the hero with the gun.
Yeah.
Because Spock does that combined karate chop gun snatch move and gets off like a one-liner on the guy. And now he's basically Bruce Willising around this complex.
Ho, ho, ho.
Now I have a blaster rifle.
Right. Back with Laurel, she's growing more and more incoherent. She appears to be doing that thing that people do just before death, like making peace with the people and the deities that they value the most. She's like sort of praying to Takuma here.
Yeah, almost like in a fugue state. It seems like she's really out of it.
Yeah. Yeah, it didn't seem like she got her ass kicked too bad by the Shadows of Kronosh before. But maybe this is what you do when you're about to die and you're a Klingon and it's not up to you.
Yeah. So Spock comes in like he does the full stormtrooper where he puts on this guy's outfit and comes in.
Yeah.
And he's got the drop on everybody. He wastes everybody in the entire room while Laurel kind of kneels there staring out the window. And then when he takes off his hood, she's like, "Hey, great. Thank you. I'm really glad you did that."
I remember you from that talk we had in the last issue.
Not that much time can have possibly gone by because there are still active fires burning in this room.
Yeah.
Like, this has been brief enough that nobody even, like, went and got a fire extinguisher and put out the blazes in the room that they're in.
It appears as though the planet they've chosen to hold these diplomatic talks does not have an OSHA-approved facility complete with carbon monoxide and fire detectors, right?
Yeah.
Maybe that's what's wrong with Laurel. Like, she's succumbing to carbon monoxide poisoning.
Oh, yeah. Except for she was the one that was kneeling, so she would be lower. She'd be inhaling less of it than the Klingons, right?
That's true.
Than the other Klingons.
Yeah. We should have been seeing the Shadows of Kalis start to get wobbly here.
Yeah.
But instead, they're shot in the head.
Maybe that's why it was so easy for Spock to get the drop on them. They were like delirious.
How about Spock distributing headshots here in the scene, like not taking any prisoners.
Yeah. Not interested.
No.
They exchange some pleasantries. He says that he regrets that he wasn't able to identify her betrayers. And she's like, don't worry about it. I'm going to make sure that my betrayers get what's coming to them. And he's like, oh, okay. Well, I don't know what you mean.
She's like, I'll show you. And then she whips open the Cleave Ship app on her phone and enables creep mode.
Yeah.
It is nuts. All she has to do is say a couple of magic words and she gets the drop on these betrayers on her Cleave Ship, and they are powerless to stop what's happening.
This is what Kirk did to the Reliant in Wrath of Khan, right? She punches in the secret code and then she's got control of the ship.
It's great.
This has got to be first thing on your list when you commandeer a ship. Going forward, alien or human, if you're commandeering a ship, you got to look into the computer system and see if there's any back doors.
You got to change all your passwords. Get that two-factor authentication going.
I used to work for this media company, and there was like occasionally somebody would, you know, get another job and move on or be fired or whatever. And there were all the like social media accounts and the, you know, the back end of their website and all these things. And there was like a process where somebody had to go in and change all the passwords and then distribute the new passwords to everybody. You know, like that's just standard practice.
I expected more from the Shadows of Kalish, to be honest. Yeah. They didn't really think this thing through.
Kind of a bullshit coup.
Like, here's what they did. They had their eye on the whole, we're going to cut her head off and then throw it off of the beheading rail at Kronos. Like, their eyes were on the end prize instead of on all the steps they needed to complete in order to get there.
I wish they'd been like, we are going to throw you in the same pit you threw that baby.
It is the baby pit.
Yeah, it would have been fun. Now she is running this ship toward the surface of the planet. She kind of taunts the leader of this rebel movement in so doing. And Spock has Pike back at the facility looking out the window, not receiving any medical treatment.
He's fine. You know what's going to make him feel a lot better? A huge explosion as the Cleave Ship runs into a mountain.
Nothing warms the bones quite like a huge explosion from a Cleave Ship.
Yeah. How many people do you think died in this accident? No mention is made about the profound loss of life here, but I mean, I'm going to guess thousands. Cleave Ship's a big ship.
When we saw the Cleave Ship in the space battle against Control, it was like way, way, way bigger than any other Klingon ship. And those are comparable in size to human ships, if not bigger, right? So presumably, like, this is tens of thousands of people.
Do you think there was ever a chance of Laurel activating this code and the Cleave Ship just cutting the planet in half? Like, oh, that's... I did not consider the power of the Cleave Ship.
Yeah, I should not have had that blade sharpened right before we left. This was a peace mission. Yeah.
So Cleave Ship falls down and goes boom. We get some Pike react, which is pretty fun.
Yeah, Pike kind of his sort of detached, semi-sarcastic self as he watches this go down. And that final picture of the Cleave Ship exploding sort of makes it look like the stern of the ship is going to fall on the facility that they're all in, but I guess that doesn't happen.
Yeah, that looks like a close call. But it gives you a sense of the scale, right?
Yeah, it's fucking huge.
Yeah.
And then up in orbit, Pike catching back up with number one and pink face, blue hair lady.
Always smiling.
Yeah. She is just a happy person.
I don't know. I mean, what's so funny all the time?
Your inherent suspicion of the happy.
Yep. Yeah, I wouldn't be able to deal with that. They kind of post-game what happened, and Number one wants to talk more about the gak-eating contest than the crashed cleave ship and Pike's many injuries, which appear to be healed at this point.
Yeah, very very standard number one writing.
Yeah.
Right? Like that kind of, like she's always leaving those little rhetorical booby traps in yeah. what she says.
Do you think the gak is alive when you shit it out?
I
bet I
don't
know. It is.
This is the first we've heard about the side effects of gak. And I would have loved to have just seen a little character arc with Riker going through that like two episodes after the Officer Exchange Program episode.
It's got to be way harder to digest than corn, right? Corn isn't trying to claw back.
Yeah. In a second, we have to turn to The Greatest Generation and record an episode of that. And there's some gah humor in that episode as well. That that implies that gah is angry to be food.
Wouldn't you be?
Yeah. No, I mean,
I understand.
I'm with the gah on this one.
Yeah. Yeah.
In Six Bay, our buddy Kor is healing up after getting, I guess, bonked on the head.
It's sad to see a Klingon in a Federation hospital bed, right? It just looks unbecoming. His loaf is all covered up.
He isn't asking for Laurel to help him die with honor or anything.
You know what he needs is like two urine jugs tied together, or like double bedpans, right?
it's the kidney shape, but it just goes off in two directions,
right?
Yeah, she is brimming with confidence in his loyalty.
And her confidence also feels like it is a little threatening too, right? Like she assures him of how omniscient she is, like
right.
putting to rest any kind of idea that Kor may have about what she thinks of him.
Right. When she says, "I know the full extent of your loyalty," and full extent is in bold.
Yeah.
It definitely doesn't make you think that she just means, "I think you're really loyal."
She's not just talking about what she can see at the bottom of his gown.
Uh-huh. Yeah. She knows the full extent of that as well.
Right. The button on the comic happens in the Enterprise shuttle bay, and it's Pike seeing Laurel off. They're both sort of amused at the circumstance. Like, can you believe it? A Klingon shuttle inside a Federation shuttle bay. And this is like the essential optimism of a Captain Pike. He's like, you know, you might have crashed your cleave ship onto a planet, and we might have been the victims of a terrorist attack during a diplomatic mission, but all in all, things are okay, right? And Laurel's like, look, man, I don't think you'd ever be allowed to bring a shuttle on board any one of my ships or over to Kronos, so why don't you chill out with the optimism a little bit, and we'll just part ways feeling a little bit neutral about the whole thing.
I mean, Pike is making the case that just having had the meeting is a win, like even though the meeting didn't, you know, resulted in the destruction of the cleave ship and no actual diplomatic process being
yeah.
commenced, just having had it on the schedule was good.
Pike's whole deal was like, it wasn't about whether or not we could achieve diplomacy. It was the friends we made along the way.
It's not the destination. It's yeah. the journey.
Laurel's not even trying to hear this, though.
She says a pretty perfunctory peace out to Pike and then to Spock, thanking him for saving her and everyone's asses. And then we get that moment where Spock shaves the beard and puts the uniform back on, which we saw at the end of season two.
Yeah, we never knew how busy this crew was before the end of the season finale.
Yeah, and we never knew what his internal monologue was in this scene.
Yeah, now we get it. You think he was shaving with one of those Geordi LaForge blue cubes?
I wish they had shown that. That would have been great.
I know.
I mean, they show TNG Batleths in this series. Why not the TNG beard trimmer?
Do you think the Gillette company kept on releasing version after version of that cube with even more cubes attached to it? The five-cubed cube by Gillette.
The economics of the future are somewhat different. We merely seek to better our razors.
Yeah.
I liked the end of the book. I was surprised and pleased that they ended it there.
Yeah, I am also satisfied with its end and shocked to maybe get a fourth book in this series. What's that about? Yeah. I don't know. We'll find out.
Now I'm looking on the Comixology site, and this says book 3 of 3. So,
huh?
Whatever I found that said that, I found December 17th as the release date for book 4, and that appears to be entirely apocryphal. The more I look into this,
wow. All right. Well, now we know.
Now we know.
One more thing to do here as we end this issue of Star Trek Discovery Aftermath, Ben, I need to ask you a question, and that is, did you find yourself an Edward Larkin?
Edward Larkin!
Oh, man. That is a great question. I think I'm going with the Klingon that was running the betrayal from the bridge of the Cleave ship.
Yeah.
Just for how Christopher Lloyd-y he is in the way he's drawn and how most of the issue he just spends being horrified at his impending explosion. Like, there is one, maybe two drawings where he is triumphant and thinks he's won, and then the rest of the time he's just shitting himself. So for that reason, he is my Edward Larkin.
Yeah, that's a good pick.
How about you, Adam?
His face definitely jumps off the page. But so does mine. Except my Edward Larkin's face is in the process of being torn apart because his is the face being shot through and through by Spock.
You're tearing me apart, Spock! Oh, hi, Laurel.
You're my favorite customer.
One of my favorite portraits in this episode is the frame where Spock, hooded Spock, comes in and starts shooting in the head everyone in the room, and you see a beam weapon go through the cheek, into the mouth, and out the other cheek.
That doesn't seem like a kill shot. It seems like it would be extremely painful and fuck your life up permanently, yeah. But it doesn't seem like it would kill you.
If the exit wound is going out the neck, which could be, I don't know. I don't like his chances, especially
because...
Yeah,
that because, does seem to be below the jawline, so maybe it hit his artery or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, so... That is who I am going to nominate as my Edward Larkin.
That is a great Larkin, Adam. That guy really has slow motion slack jaw in that shot. It's really funny.
You know what's fun about the shakows in this frame too are that his shakow has the space of his mouth in the middle, and you can almost hear the shakow differently for him. It's like shakow. Like you can hear it. You can hear it in his mouth.
Yeah, you can hear the gurgle in between. Yeah. But Discovery is old news, Adam. Why don't we move on to the first issue of Star Trek : Picard - Countdown.
Can't believe we are starting in on the Star Trek Picard story. This series is also written by Kirsten Bayer and Mike Johnson. Kirsten has had control over all of the comic stories that we've read up until now.
The title of this makes me think that it is a direct prologue to the series that we're going to be seeing.
Yeah, it's the Countdown name that does that, right? Because we got a Countdown series of comic books before the J.J. Abrams Star Trek. You remember those?
I don't.
Okay.
I confess, I don't.
Well, I'm telling you, I remember, and that's how they did it.
I'm glad you brought it up. Yeah.
I'm good for something around here.
So, I'm not good with my star dates here, but we start on Earth in 2386. So, this seems to be maybe contemporaneous with the beginning of what we've seen in the trailers for Star Trek : Picard.
Right.
And this is maybe a couple of Romulans. They are the reason I think that is that they seem to be they treat Earth as an extremely alien environment in a way that I don't think a Vulcan of this era necessarily would.
And they discuss about how unwelcome they are in this place, which is another hint to that, right?
Right. And so they are they're standing in the vineyard at Chateau Picard, taking a look at these grapes and complimenting the soil and dragging the fruit. And
wondering where all the slaves are.
Yeah. And then we cut to Mars 1 year before.
Yeah, this is a place we're familiar with from TNG. It's the Utopia Planitius shipyards, right?
Yeah. And another character we are familiar with from TNG, Geordi LaForge, has risen to the rank of full 3-pip commander and seems to be serving a function that Sisko kind of served before the events of Deep Space Nine as the commander of the shipyards, and he's in charge of rebuilding the Federation Starfleet.
That's got to be such a cool job. At first, I saw Geordi as a commander, and I was like, fuck, man, he should be better than that at this point.
Bullshit, man.
But given his responsibilities, I quickly came around to, hell yeah, Geordi LaForge.
I was wondering if we've ever seen a yellow with 4 pips. Does that ever happen?
I think, remember there was an admiral on Deep Space Nine that wore a gold tunic? And he was the only one ever to be in Star Trek?
Right.
There is some discontinuity between the pips and the colors occasionally. Yeah.
Like, it seems like captain is both a rank and a job, you know?
And a lifestyle.
Yeah. I know that, like, in the Navy, sometimes you could be, like, the rank of commander, but the captain of a ship. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I think they could have thrown another pip on Geordi. Why not?
One of the worst things I ever heard while working my office drone job was, you know, when you work in an office, you're subject to the yearly review. And those reviews are conducted by, you know, a managerial authority. And I occasionally rub shoulders with those managers because I worked in an HR department and I got to hear those conversations. But like one of the governing philosophies to the yearly review as they were implemented in this company was that you always want to give the employee a ceiling to reach for, which meant often not promoting them when they should be or not giving them a raise that was the maximum year after year because you wanted to give them room to grow. And I just thought that was the shittiest parental philosophy for management ever. Like, my eyes couldn't roll harder than once than when I was hip to that. Like, it's such shit.
Let's just all agree that MBAs on the whole have been bad for humanity.
Yeah, it really made me sad. Anyway, it relates to Geordi's thing here because I hope he's not being held back by some artificial idea of where his career should be related to his ambitions.
Geordi is looking young here, and that made me curious enough to open the Wikipedia page about Star Trek : Picard, and there's a little addendum down at the bottom about tie-in media. And it says that this is set in 2285, 2 years before the destruction of Romulus and 15 years before the TV series.
Hmm.
So that does not agree with the date at the beginning of the issue. But maybe there's a typo in one place or the other. But this Geordi does read as 15 years ago, LeVar Burton to me.
Sure does. Yeah. Yeah, he looks great. That's not to say that today's LeVar Burton doesn't look great also, but we're talking about passage of time here.
But he's got a little more salt and pepper in his temples, you know?
Fair. Yeah, so LaForge gets a FaceTime from Picard, and it is a nice reveal, and they seem very happy to be talking to each other.
Big buds, and Picard is aboard a ship called the Verity. And he is out in the Romulan part of the Alpha Quadrant, overseeing the evacuation of the inner worlds of the Romulan Empire because the star that Romulus orbits is going to go supernova, and that's kind of it's a ticking time bomb, but nobody quite knows how much time they have.
The Verity is a fucking whale of a ship, Ben, and its registry number is 97,000.
Yeah, it kind of looks like the Enterprise E fucked the Voyager, and they had like a really big baby.
Like, I'm going to use film terminology here, but they cut to behind Picard as he's looking at the view screen. View screen looks like it's 100 yards away. Like, yeah. Everything is elongated.
Yeah. Well, it also, like, the way the chairs look makes me think that they drew this to look like it's being shot on an extremely wide lens.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and that would also, like...
I like that.
Greatly... exaggerate how far away the view screen looks to our eyes, but I think it looks super extreme, especially because when you cut back to Geordi in his office, he's like sitting on the edge of his desk, yeah, about 10 feet away from an 85 inch flat panel TV with Picard's face on it. These uniforms are real wild too.
Yeah, I think I like them.
A really jazzed up version of the TNG era uniform.
They're talking about Geordi's progress in building all these ships. They need a lot of ships to help with the relocation of these Romulans. Relocation by the hundreds of thousands, or even, I don't know, the millions. It is a big, big job.
Maybe billions, right? Because, I mean, the Romulan homeworld's got to be a popular place to live. You've got all of the people that live on Remus.
Yeah.
That we met in Nemesis, which is referenced in this comic book.
This entire issue is about deadlines, and Picard constantly refers to these deadlines as a thing that he's struggling against, and he's asking Geordi, you're going to be done on time, man. We need those ships.
It also really spends a lot of time in the captain's log, or in the admiral's log, I should say.
Yeah.
Because... It's a lot of exposition. It's a lot of table setting, and he has been ordered away from the Romulan homeworld and toward a planet called Yuyat Beta, and he doesn't want to go there because he believes that Yuyat Beta is not a populated planet, and he's got a first officer who disabuses him of that pretty quickly.
I think the galaxy made their decision in the Yuyet Beta versus Yuyet VHS wars. I think we know who won. Ben, I don't want to skip too far past something that you mentioned, which is the Admiral's log doing a lot of the expositional lifting for this comic. It makes me wonder if a Kirsten Bayer and a Star Trek Discovery / Picard writer's room are aware of and reluctant to use that as an instrument for storytelling, because it's such a cheat in a way that many writers and creators, I feel like, would be reluctant to use. Like, you hear all the time about showing and not telling and how one should always attempt to show instead of tell, but Star Trek seems to have this DNA of telling that is so tightly woven into itself that's got to be really difficult, right?
I don't know. Like, I'm really curious with this comic book series in particular, how much it is going to tie into the story in the show, because this is the first story they've released to do with this show, and it really feels like the opening crawl in a Star Wars thing almost, like, yeah, how much it is just giving us a bunch of context about what's going on.
This is going to be the most difficult lift too, because this is the series that's going to be the most comparable to a TNG directly, you know. Yeah. The fan culture that rejected Star Trek Discovery for not being my Star Trek, I feel like, is going to be even more sensitive to a series like this that actually has the same characters in it.
Right. I've definitely got mixed feelings about how much the trailer seems to be about continuing the story of Nemesis, which, you know, I and a lot of people think is one of the less good movies in the Star Trek canon.
What a challenge, though. Like, could we retroactively make that movie better? is a hell of a goal.
So Picard is working with Lieutenant Commander Raffi Musiker, and she is the she is like one of the foremost experts on the Romulans in the Federation. She knows all about these people.
And we recognize her from that Picard trailer too.
Oh, has she been in the? Was she in the trailer?
Yeah, she's the one that draws a gun on Picard, and then they sit down in another scene and have some of the wine that he brought.
Oh shit, Doug.
Yeah.
Cool. We spend a lot of time going over and over and over what a paranoid and suspicious people the Romulans are, and how they, you know, they won't tell us anything. Like, it's always a game of chess. They are always obscuring things, always occluding the truth. I mean, this all really feels like Picard is being set up, like, from the moment they start talking about doing something on behalf of the Romulans.
Yeah. Never a straight hallway with the Romulans.
Yeah.
As the saying goes.
It's like a duck vagina.
Right. It's like a pig's dick.
Oh, they all want to mate with me with their corkscrew penises.
Picard gets a FaceTime from a guy named Athus, an invitation from Athus to beam on down to Uyat Beta. And this is an invitation that Picard and Musiker accept. They beam down into what looks like a giant cathedral-like space and are greeted by a bunch of armed guards.
Uyat really sounds like a neologism like YOLO.
Yeah.
Like you usually yell at trucks.
Yeah, that's what that means.
You usually yell at titties.
Oh, even better. That's
what all the Generation Zs are talking about, right?
Nice self-punch up.
Yeah. You yet. Okay, boomer.
And these armed guards escort Picard and Musiker to what kind of looks like a Genesis planet exterior.
Yeah, very lush and beautiful. Pink sky with birds flying in it. You know, very beautiful terrace that they're hanging out on. And the Romulans are like, this is pretty nuts, right? Like, we're just letting you see how we live down here. Like, we're pretty cool, right? As Romulans, like, you don't expect this from people like us.
God, it should be so threatening.
Yeah, and we meet, Uyat is just the major domus of the governor of this planet. But we meet her. She is a wood elf named Governor Shiana. And she shows up in her green and yellow garb with the long blonde Legolas hair of all wood elves.
Were you like me in this scene with like just a low-key fear of a blonde Romulan going on? Like, I thought I was totally getting Rom Jarlin vibes from her. Like, she can't be trusted, can she?
Fear of a Blonde Romulan is one of my favorite Public Enemy albums.
Yeah, mine too.
She greets Picard as hero of the Federation and vanquisher of the traitor Shinzon. So another big nemesis reference here. And he is very embarrassed about that comparison.
I mean, that guy looked exactly like me, but he wasn't me, babe. He wasn't me.
Yeah, I merely adopted the darkness. He was born in it.
Uh-huh.
So he is, you know, at great pains to explain that he's just here, an Octopip admiral, to evacuate the 10,000 people that he's been led to believe live on this planet.
Should be an easy lift, right? Just 10,000 mm-hmm. people, done and done.
The Verity is by far big enough to beam 10,000 people up.
The Verity is a BBS, a big, beautiful starship.
The Verity's got plenty of trunk for all of this Romulan junk. And
Picard is only momentarily distracted by this blonde Romulan before he turns his attention to the vineyards in the distance. And he is super psyched to go visit them because it looks like they're growing a type of wine grape there.
Yeah, he's extremely excited about that. He almost like loses his capacity for speech. Like he runs out and starts like taking a look at the fruit, and He's trying to explain, like, my family, something, something, and then he notices the slaves that the Romulans have working the vineyards.
They're Groot slaves, Ben.
Yeah, they are Groot. Their names are Ikal and Ijav, these two guys that he sees, and the Major Domus is explaining that, this is the local species, and... Yeah. When the star goes supernova, they will probably be burned to a crisp, but maybe they won't, and maybe we'll be able to come back and hang out here again and continue enslaving them.
The slavery has been normalized to such a degree that he's just very casual about the idea of this genocide.
This is such a fun TNG-style premise, right?
Yeah,
you're rescuing us, not our slaves. And Picard has a quintessential Picard reaction to that. Like, no, we're rescuing the intelligent species here. Like, my orders are very specifically not about rescuing Romulans, but rescuing all of the, like, higher forms of evolution on every planet that we're evacuating. How many of these people are there here? And they're like, oh, they're like probably 5 million, but they all live in the forest and they, you know, they're primitives.
Picard is totally incredulous. He's like, the dumps on my trunk are not big enough.
You think I got enough suspension to hold up 5 million of these Groots? You're nuts.
Yeah, he does not have enough big, beautiful starship for all these Groots. It's a big problem.
Sure is. He demands to be taken back to the governor to complain. And she's gone from, like, being friendly looking to like, you know, lounging on a chaise longue and drinking wine and looking sinister as fuck.
Right.
Her affect is so different in this next scene.
Yeah. You know, I was hearing Damon Lindelof talk about the new Watchmen show in an interview, and there's a couple of things that happen in that show that feels like this scene, which is like he really relishes the moment where a bad guy has been caught doing a bad thing and does not seek to cover it up any longer, but is instead, yeah, it me. What are you gonna do about it? And that happens a couple of times in the Watchmen show on HBO, and it's happening here in this scene too. Blonde Romulan's like, yeah. What are you going to do about it? Not my problem.
He gives very, like, contemporary presidential administration vibes. Like, yeah, we're putting them in cages. Who cares?
It does not end well. It ends with Picard and Musiker being detained and the threat of their big, beautiful starship just being taken and used by the Romulans there for their purposes.
And the button on the issue is Picard in some kind of jail cell doing something that is very familiar to me, which is the self-recrimination, the beating himself up over being such an idiot.
Yeah.
And that's also a really familiar Picard feeling, right? Like the really like wanting to see the best in everyone and believing in the inherent virtue of all intelligent life, and having had that blind him to the deviousness around him.
While also never believing himself to be a savior in any way. I mean, there are many episodes of TNG where Picard himself is seen as a god by some people, and he's always rejected that kind of treatment.
Yeah.
So, did you like this comic book, Ben?
It feels like a lot of table setting, but I really did like it. I like the way it's setting this up, and knowing now that it's theoretically meant to be 15 years before the episode of the show makes it make a little bit more sense, because I was like, was he an admiral as of 1 year before like being Grape Dad that needs to like go like get back into Starfleet and go on an adventure? Like that was really tripping me up reading it the first time, but if it's 15 years before that, then it makes a lot more sense to me.
Yeah. You know, on our hit show Friendly Fire, I think we talk a lot about how important it is for a movie that's in a series to also be able to stand on its own, and I think that kind of judgment is something that I think we should level against a comic book in a series. But at the same time, I feel like this one succeeds in a lot of areas. I think the thing that elevates it up above the table setting pejorative is Picard himself, you know? And I think when you include that character in a work, I think he's just too great to be denied. And this could be a story about a guy laboring in his own vineyards. And I think I would be just as satisfied with it. And I think that makes it hard to judge a work that includes that character.
Does Picard, like, are the ethical dilemmas popping up around Picard, or does he go and find them? You know?
Oh, like he could be one of those girls that's attracted to drama?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? I'm thinking about what we saw in the Picard trailer, and I can't help but believe that we know this mission to be a failure because we don't see any Groot in that trailer.
Hmm.
And maybe that's what's fucked him up. That's how he's out of Starfleet. He tried to save the Groots.
Yeah.
He was unable to. He throws his hands up. He gets the Verity taken from him. Not a good look.
Even without trying to predict what the show will be about, this really made me think about how much time 20 years means and how much backstory we will never get on what happened between the events of TNG and this new series.
Well, I hope it means there's going to be a lot more comic content for us to read because, I mean, there's a lot of space to fill. And if it is, if it's anything like the comics we've been reading lately, I think it's ably done.
Yeah, I'm pumped about it. But I have a question for you, Adam.
Oh, what's that, Ben?
In this first issue of the Star Trek Picard comic book, did you find yourself an Edward Larkin?
Yeah, for the first time in a long time, I'm going to give it to Admiral Picard. I just don't think you can get your pants pulled down like this. He's been in the game a long time. You know, he beams down himself. You know, this is a thing that he's always struggled against, this rule about flag officers going on away teams. Not a surprise that he goes down there with his lieutenant commander. But, I mean, come on. If you say in your inner monologue how little the Romulans can be trusted, I think you got to bring a dustbuster, at least. And he does not. So Admiral Picard is my Edward Larkin. How about you?
My Edward Larkin is probably a minor Edward Larkin in the scheme of things, but in that shot we talked about where it's the super wide shot of the bridge of the Verity, there are a bunch of crew members standing around, a couple of them working at stations, a couple of them walking or having a conversation with each other, a couple looking at the view screen, but off to the right there's one that is very, very emphatically not looking at the view screen. I think it's an Andorian lady, and she is just standing, not doing anything, with her back turned to Geordi LaForge. I just thought that was a funny place to be standing and nothing, you know, and not doing anything. So for that reason, she is my Edward Larkin.
I'm just going to be right here.
I'm not going to look at that bozo.
I don't know. Maybe take the FaceTime in private, Geordi? What do you think?
Yeah. She's also, there's also a blue, you know, science division Andorian working for Geordi. She's the one that comes in and says that that he's got a call coming in from Picard. So maybe she's like, ugh, my twin sister works for this idiot.
It's sort of like the, you know, when you put someone on speaker, like if you're in a car or something.
Yeah, it can be a little bit embarrassing to be sort of unannounced.
It's considerate to always say that, hey, you're on speaker and so is also in the car. Like when we cut back to Picard, Picard doesn't know that lady's in the room.
Fair.
He could be saying some embarrassing shit.
Would you mind staying tonight until my other guests have gone?
How much time transpired in between Nemesis and this for Picard to now be an Octopip Admiral?
There is an answer. I'm positive it's out there. We just don't know what it is. Like all of this has been resolved. It's our policy of not doing research that that's crippling us right now with questions like that.
Because he's a captain still in Nemesis. He hasn't gotten upgraded or anything in that movie.
Yeah. They refer to the Enterprise in this comic having another captain.
Yeah.
And last time we saw the Enterprise, she was pretty fucked up in the saucer, having crashed itself into the Scimitar, right? That was pretty epic. I mean, that's probably a salvage title starship right there once you patch the Enterprise back together. Like, you got to believe that where at one point a captain would be excited to be the captain of the Enterprise, I think salvage title Enterprise probably isn't as cool. That's probably why Picard's on the Verity, right?
This ship has a lot of history, but frankly, she's never run right since the...
It says on the ship's registry that that the Enterprise has sustained flood damage.
Hey, what? Did you get a Carfax before you got the commission on this ship? Or
it was kind of bought and sold many times after that incident with the Scimitar.
Yeah, what you want is a clear chain of custody. You know, you want to know who owned it last and what they did with it.
Kind of shows a little bit of evidence of a odometer rollback on the warp core. Didn't want that.
Yeah. Yeah, they flew it around in reverse for a long time.
Ben, we have evidence of Priority One messages. You want to go see what those are?
Oh, yeah. Let's check them out.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Adam, we have one Priority One message here. It is from T-Rex, and it's for everyone. So maybe we only need one if it's for everyone.
I don't know how T-Rex is going to use a keyboard with those short arms.
Yeah. Well, here's the message. Earth has survived 5 mass extinction events. Extinction isn't only possible, it's inevitable. The species at the top die out, and the meek inherit the Earth. After each extinction, evolution progresses in leaps and bounds. We may not be the species to come out on top or even survive the next extinction, but at least we can try to set a good example. Shit.
What?
I'm engulfed in ennui after reading the P1 from T-Rex.
I was thinking this would be a message by, you know, one of those inflatable T-Rex costume people with something silly and fun to say, but now...
No, this is T-Rex spelled W-R-E-X.
So, oh, yeah. Like, very
wrecking
different.
Your mood is basically what this T-Rex is all about.
Yeah, well, I don't prescribe to that end of the world gospel, so I...
No, you're not an eschatologist?
I'm trying to make a better future for all of us in what meager way I can.
Yeah, well, actually, this episode will come out on Giving Tuesday, and I have some exciting Greatest Gen-related giving announcements to make.
All right, lay it on us.
Over the course of our fall tour for Greatest Gen, we raised $2,600 for Amazon Watch, the great charity that is supporting indigenous folks that live in the Amazon in their quest to preserve their homelands from logging and mining and stuff. And we also are going to be donating $1,000 worth of Lego kits to the Children's Hospital in Los Angeles.
Hey, that's great.
So some big gifts from the Friends of DeSoto to some really great causes. And I have 2 giant boxes full of like dozens and dozens of Lego kits sitting in my office right now that I need to drive down to Children's Hospital. But yeah, like none of that would have been able to happen without the kindness and generosity of the folks that came out to our live shows and who support us on a monthly basis at Maximum Fun. And so, you know, I think in the way of setting a good example, the Friends of DeSoto have done that.
Yeah, sure have. That makes me feel great.
Yeah. It
makes me feel a little better than T-Rex's message.
Yeah. So, you know, this is something we really feel privileged to be able to do, and we appreciate everyone who bought a challenge coin or supported us with a P1 on tour. We have one announced tour show left at San Francisco Sketch Fest. We're going to be doing Greatest Gen Con 2 live on stage at Cobb's Comedy Club on January 17th. So, and I think some folks from Amazon Watch will be at the show. So hopefully we'll be able to, you know, introduce interested people to them and, you know, people can find out how they can help.
They are going to be horrified about where this money is coming from.
Yeah, yeah, indeed. But if you would like to send a P1 message to The Greatest Discovery, you head to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It's $100 for a personal message and $200 for a commercial message. And we really appreciate it. Helps us make this show possible.
Boy, we kind of reversed the order of the Edward Larkin and the P1s, didn't we?
Yeah, but we had all the... I mean, we had two different issues to read, so yeah. I think we did it the right way.
I think we did it the only way we could have. And the only way we can possibly end an episode is to throw it to Rob's, right?
Is next episode definitely about short treks?
Yeah, so let's set the table for what's going to happen for the next few episodes of Greatest Discovery. The next episode coming out on the 17th is going to be a short treks episode, followed by an episode having to do with the next in the series of Star Trek Picard comics. That's on the 31st. And then on the 14th, we are back to the final short treks episode of The Greatest Discovery. That's just before the episode on January 28th, which will be about Star Trek Picard Episode 1. The premiere of Star Trek Picard, of course, is on January 23rd. So we've aligned our episodes to come out the week after these premiere dates.
And hopefully we've done our homework a little bit better on when stuff is coming out.
Yeah. This time. Plenty to do. Yeah. That's what's great, right? We're rich with things to discuss in the new Star Trek universe.
Yeah, we sure are. We feel very fortunate. So, yeah, let's throw it to Rob's.
The Greatest Discovery is a Maximum Fun podcast hosted by Benjamin Harrison and Adam Pranica. It's produced by me, Rob Schulte. Our theme music is by Friend of DeSoto and YouTube sensation Adam Ragusea. The Greatest Discovery is made possible by the support of our listeners like you. Make sure the show continues by going to MaximumFun.org/donate. If you'd like to discuss the show online, please use the hashtag GreatestDiscovery. You can find Ben on Twitter at BenjaminAHR. Adam is at CutForTime. And I'm at Rob K. Schulte. Thanks, we'll see you on the next episode of The Greatest Discovery.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.